From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capitol Notes podcast, our weekly rambling on politics and government for the week ending December 4th. Yeah, December 4th. I got it right for a change. I'm John Myers from KQED, the guy giving me the hand signals across the studio. Not that hand signal. Is Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly. And so we're here in our post-Thanksgiving.
Good morning, Jonathan. Nice to be with you.
Is that your, like, low public
That's
radio
my NPR voice?
Voice. How's
that?
Is that your NPR voice? We don't use
What's
NPR
up?
Voice.
What's up, podcast people?
That's right. Better. That's good. People will enjoy that. That's the other guy.
Not to be confused with the other man.
Right. We got a nice email from a listener who referred to Anthony as the other guy. I think it's been under his skin now.
Myers has been glowing all week.
Glowing?
Yeah, I would say glowing.
Yes. Well, since we... excuse me. Since we pre-taped our Thanksgiving podcast.
What?
We did.
Oh.
We've told people that already.
I thought that was live? No. Anyway.
No. Since we pre-taped the Thanksgiving podcast and we taped the one before that, the day before the governor made his big lieutenant governor announcement, we're going to talk about that today as well. But first, let's talk about the new person who wants a new job or a new new job guy or
so eloquent.
Something like that. Yes, I have a way with
and
words.
I'm the other guy.
Can you tell I'm in the business of writing? I have a way
you
with
talk
words.
Talk words a lot.
The race for Speaker of the Assembly, new Speaker of the California Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just go to the guy who covers the inside game better than anyone
we do.
In Sacramento.
We do. Point well taken.
Anthony York. Anthony, who's the next speaker? Or better yet... Is the next speaker a done deal? Is the selection of the next speaker a done deal?
No, the healing needs to begin. It's not there yet. But
it's not even
it
your
does.
Term. That's Karen Bass's term
but
from,
it do-
from Wednesday.
See, I'm paraphrasing here. But it looks as if the front runner at this point is Assemblyman John Perez, a freshman from Los Angeles. And he has put together, apparently, a majority of votes from the Democratic caucus.
Do we have to call him the front runner, or can we say he appears to have it? Or is that too far because you'd have to call every member of the caucus?
Depends who you're talking to.
Okay.
I mean, I think there is a conventional wisdom that the job will go to Perez. There are still supporters.
Next week, perhaps.
Right. There could be a vote of the caucus as early as next week. The interesting thing about this is that... Perez has sort of vaulted to the front of the pack here. He was not a declared candidate for the job, although he was on some people's radar screens. But he's getting his push with the help of a current speaker, Karen Bass. And it's very early. It's interesting because given recent history, you've never seen an incumbent speaker play their cards so early. I mean, tactically, you know, what's going on now is that Perez, with Bass's help, is trying to create a sense of inevitability.
Well,
and it seems to be working.
Well, let's talk about the way that the whole race kind of gelled over the last few days, weeks, whatever. Now, there were several people who wanted the job. We should lay out for people who don't follow it all the time. Karen Bass is termed out in 2010.
Correct.
So it's not as though she's being kicked out or stepping down on her own. She was termed out of office. And depending on when she leaves the speakership formally, she could be speaker for 18 months or so, depending. She took the job in May of 2008, so it depends
Correct.
On when it all happens. So she's being termed out of office. Several people wanted the job. Several names that are no longer in the running. I mean, that's fair to say, right? I mean, several people
right.
dropped out of this at a certain point for one reason or the other.
Namely, Felipe Fuentes, a Democrat from Sylmar, and Anthony Portantino, a Democrat from La Cañada, Flint Ridge.
There you go. See, you are the insider man, my man.
There we are.
And so that left Kevin De Leon, assembly member from Los Angeles, Democrat from L.A., and De Leon wanted the job, lobbied for the job with other members, and then all of a sudden we got the John Perez thing going. And,
correct.
And from your reading of talking to people in the building, was it that because Speaker Bass, when she talked to reporters on Wednesday, said that basically Perez didn't campaign for the job, people wanted Perez, and people tried to encourage Perez to do it. Is that
Eisenhower, right?
Is that... Maybe. Is that a fair read of it? Or did Perez want it and, like, you know, was more coy about it or quiet than De Leon?
It's a fair read of the narrative. I mean, look, John Perez, let's back up. Kevin De Leon was elected And was instantly seen as a speakership candidate because he was close friends with Fabian Nunez.
Childhood friend of Fabian Nunez.
Fabian Nunez played aggressively in a contested primary to get Kevin DeLeon elected. It was Nunez's top priority back in 2006 when DeLeon was first elected. And so he came up here as the speaker's buddy. And that got him access to a lot of things. But it also, you know, it's like the popular kid sometimes has a hard time on the playground, right? Because that didn't make any sense. Erase that from your podcast memories.
But, yeah, I don't remember any of the popular kids having a hard time. I remember the geek having a hard time.
How about the teacher's son?
Fair enough.
Okay.
Teacher's pet.
Right. And so there was a certain amount of resentment and jealousy, I think, directed towards DeLeon that he had to try to overcome. And so he was pretty open about wanting to be a candidate for speaker. He ran last time against Karen Bass, was unable to marshal the votes. And I think there was a sense among people who'd watched this that people who were not yet on board with DeLeon were never going to get there because he had been asking aggressively for 4 years or 3 years, whatever it is. And so there was always a sense of, will it be DeLeon sort of by default here, or could there be somebody else to run? Now, the other candidates, namely Fuentes and Portantino, both had their strengths and weaknesses, some political alliances that would have hampered their ability to take the job, and also some personal relationships with members. I mean, a lot of this has to do with personal relationships, and we can get into that in a little bit. But you know, Portantino and Fuentes had issues of their own, and so there was always a sense of, could there be another candidate? And when people ask themselves that question, they look to John Perez for reasons that we can discuss.
Yeah, and Perez has been chair of the Assembly Democratic Caucus,
right?
Which is a leadership role under Speaker Bass.
Right.
Perez, and we'll talk about this in a moment more in detail because this is an interesting side element to this whole drama. Perez has been preparing to run for the state Senate.
Correct.
The seat being vacated by State Senator Gil Cedillo because of term limits.
Right.
We'll come back to that in a moment. But let's talk a little bit about how somebody becomes speaker. Essentially, you have to have a simple majority of the votes of the whole 80-member House. So
right.
41 votes is the infamous number that we learned in the era of Willie Brown.
Correct.
Which I think is an interesting anecdote to all of this in a moment.
That's for the podcast book edition.
No. This is the podcast. We're not constrained by time.
I hope you got some time.
People love this show.
Oh, cast. I'm glad you said show.
Show
I thought
cast.
You were going to say something else. People love this show.
Okay, this is still family radio.
That's what I was going
to
say.
So you have to get 41 votes, at least, a simple majority to become speaker.
Right.
However, no one believes, especially in this hyper-partisan era, that Republicans in the Assembly are going to vote in a contested race.
Correct.
For a liberal Democrat as speaker. Now, maybe they'll give a courtesy vote if it's a unanimous thing like they did with Bass, blah, 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 blah. So effectively, the race becomes among the 50/51 members of the Assembly Democratic Caucus.
Right.
I say slash because Juan Arámbula from Fresno used to be a Democrat and is now a declined state.
We are in the weeds this
morning.
We are
deep. Okay. But let's just say, let's stay with it, baby.
All right.
So let's say even out of 50 members, that means if the caucus plays by the simple majority rule, you'd need 26. You remember math?
That would be gentleman's math.
Right. You would need 26 votes out of the 50 members of the Assembly Democratic Caucus, or 51, to get the caucus's support to become speaker. So that, folks, now that you've heard all that, has become the game. Who could get to 26, right?
Right.
I mean, at least 26. You know, who could get there first? Karen Bass, when she talked to reporters on Wednesday, and then actually before that, people had said that John Perez had gotten to about 30. Karen Bass said she was vote number 29, was the quote she said to us. I don't know if you what's your intel tell you how many votes Perez has at this point.
Well, I think it's worth talking about
the issue of
41.
It's in the right ballpark, though, right?
I haven't seen the letters. Have you? I mean,
no,
I think it's in the ballpark.
You're the insider.
Absolutely.
But let's back up to 41.
But I do know that speakership politics, there's a lot of bluff and bluster in this game. And there always has been. And I don't think this case is any different. But the point being, I think what is at the craw of the DeLeon folks as of this recording Thursday morning, right? Is that okay to say?
That's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It's embargoed until Friday morning.
Fair enough. Is that Bass helped Perez orchestrate a majority of the caucus support.
And apparently, so says the De Leon camp.
And no,
she says it too. Okay.
I mean, Bass was there yesterday, right? I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Bass has been involved in this for a while,
helping pick her successor.
Yes, and yes. That successor was not going to be Kevin DeLeon in Bass's mind. Now, see, you've thrown me off here. So Bass helps Perez into the race, helps orchestrate some support for him, gets him, say, presumably gets him to 26 to 30, whatever it is. What has the DeLeon supporters angry at this point is they bring up this point of 41, and that instead of going to them, instead of going to DeLeon once they got to 26, once they got to 30, they went to the press. I mean, Karen Bass called a press conference yesterday and said, okay, you know, and we asked her in the press conference if she had spoken to DeLeon yet.
Right.
She said, no,
right.
I haven't, you know, and John Perez, as of last night, had not spoken to DeLeon yet. And so.
And Perez wasn't at the event with Speaker Bass.
Right.
And Perez
there was an not, empty chair
and
next to her.
Exactly. And Perez
really
was
weird.
Not talking to reporters yesterday either.
Right. And so. So, and that's where you get into this, the game of bluff and bluster. And this could be over by tomorrow. I mean, or this could play out over a couple of days. But I think.
So this podcast is going to be dated by the time we
could be,
put it out?
Could be. These Damn. Stories move very quickly. I mean, that's one of the lessons of the week is that when the speakership happens, it happens really quickly. And what's interesting is the similarities between this process and the way Karen Bass got elected, and also some of the differences. And I don't know if you want to go that deep, but.
Yeah, we'll see.
Probably not. But that's for another podcast.
Well, let's talk about a couple of other things. I mean, first of all, I referenced a moment ago that the whole thing about getting to 41, because, you know, theoretically, someone who did not have the support of all of a majority of the Democratic caucus could go and strike a deal with Republicans in the assembly to become speaker by 41 votes by getting votes from the Republicans.
Don't you follow my Twitter feed, Myers?
I follow yours.
Twitter.com/Capital Weekly?
Or
plug.
No. Don't you follow mine? Twitter.com/KQED_CapNotes? Okay.
Of course I do.
And the most famous case of that happening was Willie Brown.
Right.
Was Willie Brown holding on to the speakership by pulling out a few votes out of the Republican majority in the assembly at that time from Jim Brulte. And the whole notion of Brulte learned how to count to 41 and Willie Brown kept to be speaker. But that was a different era. It was a different situation. And yes, I read on your Twitter feed that the Republicans in the assembly are saying that's not going to happen.
Well, and we have some and some of the confusion is. DeLeon's surrogates yesterday, after Bass's statement, were making this point of, hey, it takes 41. It takes 41. And I think a lot of us, and I don't think it's an unfair interpretation, a lot of us interpreted that to mean DeLeon might be talking to Republicans, right? That's the point.
I would have said thought the same thing.
I did, too. And it was explained to me afterwards by some supporters of DeLeon that that wasn't the point they were making. The point they were making is that in the past, even though the rules have been once you have a majority of the caucus, then the caucus comes in, there hasn't been a vote and that there's been no effort to reach out between the two camps. And that has to happen. I mean, John Perez has to pick up the phone and call Kevin DeLeon because Kevin DeLeon's not going to concede. I mean, it's not an election, you know. It's they're going to have a vote on this in caucus next week, and I would imagine sometime between today and then there will be a conversation between John Perez and Kevin DeLeon.
All right, let's back up now and try to talk about why it matters to anybody who I don't know, anybody who's not involved in this level of detail.
Okay.
Minutia, maybe I would even call it, of the Capitol.
Huh.
First of all, policy differences between De Leon and Perez, I don't think they're probably a lot.
Not significant.
They both would be considered progressive or liberal, whichever term we use these days, Democrats.
Sons of labor, yes.
Yeah. But Perez maybe more even than De Leon.
Yes.
I mean, Perez has a very strong labor background, was a labor official.
It was
one point
for the political director for the United Food and Commercial Workers. Big grocery strike in Los Angeles in the earlier part of the decade.
So it's hard to see either one of them coming at the policy issues in front of the legislature, in front of the assembly, really any differently.
Right.
They probably have different working styles, personalities. That plays a huge part in this, too.
Big part.
There's also this thing that De Leon, if he became speaker, would be another short-term speaker.
Right.
He only has one term left in the assembly, assuming he wins his next election. John Perez could be be a speaker for 5 years if he wins all his terms, because he's a freshman member of the assembly.
This is the Fabian Nunez mold for the speakership.
So that plays into this, too, about stability of leadership in the assembly.
And I think that was significant.
Yeah, and that's a big thing that Karen Bass talked about, which is interesting because Karen Bass was a short-term speaker. So, but anyway.
Right, and I think that these things are reactionary, right? Yeah. I mean, they react.
People go one way to the other way.
Compare Nunez's personality to Bass and Bass's to Perez. And
the other thing that's interesting about this, too, is you know, we talk a lot about political reporters here at the Capitol talk a lot about, you know, the unruliness of Republican caucuses. You know, I mean, the governor even talked about the whole, you know, wild bunch of Senate Republicans during a budget debate one time. You know, they're really unruly. And that kind of makes it sound like they're grumbling or unhappy. You know, everybody's policy issues have to kind of fit into a larger mold, and the state has its own problems, et cetera, et cetera. Assembly Democrats, I think, are a fairly unhappy group of people in the Capitol over the last year, because I think they feel, you talk to many more of them than I do, but the ones I've talked to, too, they feel as though all they have done is give on budget issues to Republicans. There have been none of their priorities taken care of. They've cut all the programs that they came here to support and that they believe in. There's been no give by Republicans on revenue issues. And so this is an unhappy group of people looking for a leader to, I guess, what, tell a draw a line in the sand, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's part of what Perez represents is, look, we're going to have some – it's been tough for a couple of years, and there's going to be a couple more tough years.
Right.
And I think that part of the appeal of Perez is that there is a sense that by the time Perez's speakership is over, things will be better, just on the natural. And so – it almost, you know, it almost prepares this group by giving them a long-term vision. I mean, remember, these are all folks that have been here at the most 5 years, right? And in those 5 years, it hasn't been very good times. So, and those are the veterans, right? Two-thirds of them have only been here for 3 years or less. So, so I think that is part of this, is that, look, we've got one or two really tough budgets coming up, and that Perez will be in a position to make some hard choices now, and to maybe, and in preparation for something better in the medium term future. And I think that's a big part of it, absolutely.
And let's not forget, too, that Daryl Steinberg, the president pro tem of the state Senate, assuming he wins his next election, too, is well set to be the pro tem of the Senate for a long amount of time. So you would have theoretically a Democratic leadership block that could take a several years approach if Perez was speaker.
And those personal relationships help make deals. They do. Every time there's a new face in the Big Five.
Or make deals fizzle.
Every time there's a new face in the Big Five, it sets the process back. It doesn't matter who it is. I mean, Dennis Hollingsworth was new this time around. Sam Blakesley was new this time around.
Those are the two Republican leaders.
Two Republican leaders. Dennis Hollingsworth will be there again, presumably, this time around. Not so sure about Sam Blakesley. I mean, he's termed out. There's the Abel Maldonado situation, which we can talk about.
Which is next.
And that'll be our segue, right? And there's already talk of the race to replace Sam Blakesley. So, and that is going to change the dynamic of the negotiations. And so I do think that that stability, the hope of developing a new working relationship with Steinberg and with whoever the new governor is going to be next year, that there will be 4 years, at least on the Democratic side and in the governor's chair, of some stability when it comes to the Big Five.
So if everybody's had a kumbaya moment and come together in the race for the next assembly speaker by the time you hear this, then just
blame the other guy.
Just be happy that you got to listen to the process as it was.
15 minutes of your life you're never going to get back.
Or a little bit more than that, as I'm sitting here on the stopwatch. Okay, well, let's talk about the other one that we know where it is for now, though it is a volatile issue, but volatile later on. So right after we taped the last podcast, the governor came out and made it official. Abel Maldonado, Republican state senator from the Central Coast, is his pick to be the new lieutenant governor. His lieutenant governor designee, I don't know which it is.
Whichever you prefer.
Whichever one I prefer. And so now Maldonado lands in the laps of the Democratic leadership in the Assembly and the Senate. we've got a leadership kind of uncertain in the Assembly.
Yes.
So really, it all comes down to this. What do Democrats want to do? How do you solve a problem like Abel?
Yeah, and I think it's probably more specifically Senate Democrats, first and foremost.
Okay, because the ramifications are, let's let me put it this way, and then you give me your astute analysis. Let me lay it out this way. The pros of Democrats giving Abel Maldonado a lieutenant governor job, they open up his seat on the Central Coast, which they think they could win.
Right.
It may be a little tougher race than some Democrats think it'll be if you look at that district. But nonetheless, they think they've got a fighting chance at picking up the 26th vote in the Senate, which would get them closer to a two-thirds on budget and taxes. That's a pro if they give Maldonado the job. Mm-hmm. The other is they look like they're, you know, bipartisan, willing to do something, yada, yada, yada. The con if they give Maldonado the job for some Democrats is – suppose they don't win the Senate race and they get another Republican in there. They've given Maldonado the lieutenant governor job, put him in a position to win the job outright in the 2010 election, have made him a strong statewide official now as a Republican, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, there's a real political, you know, guessing game to figure out about what Democrats want to do.
And it's not just Democrats. Remember, there are members of the Republican caucus, two of whom are running for lieutenant governor, who do not want Abel Maldonado to be confirmed.
But do you think that plays into the feelings of Democrats on this?
Well, I think it plays into the politics of Maldonado being confirmed, because as it stands now, if they have 90 days to act, and Maldonado, if nothing happens in 90 days, he
By February 22nd.
He automatically becomes lieutenant governor. In the meantime, either house can reject Maldonado's confirmation. So if he fails to secure a majority of votes in either house, either the Senate or the Assembly, he's dead. His nomination is dead. And so it becomes a game, just like the speakership is a game to 41. For Maldonado, it's a game to 21 in the Senate. And there are some Republicans who are not going to vote for him, and clearly some Democrats who are not. But can he cobble together a coalition of 21 from both parties?
And the same thing in the Assembly.
Right.
Can he cobble together the 41 he needs there? And let's not forget that in the interim, since Governor Schwarzenegger, named Maldonado as his choice, Maldonado has made it clear he's running for the job outright
regardless.
In 2010.
Right.
He's going to run. And so one of the things that plays in here is if the Democrats reject him, the last time this happened, the Democrats rejected a Republican appointee was Dan Lundgren.
Right. Well, Marion Bergeson after.
But let's say Lundgren is the most celebrated case.
Right.
Lundgren was appointed to be the treasurer of the state following the death of the legendary
Jess Unruh.
Big Daddy, who still appears in some kind of vapor in the back of Capital Weekly every week.
We've got some access.
Lundgren was appointed to fill that slot. The Democrats in the legislature said no way. He has larger statewide ambitions. He's too conservative. Lundgren almost used that as a badge of honor that he got beaten about by Democrats in the legislature, went on to be attorney general, and ran for governor, though he lost.
Now he's back in Congress.
Yeah, now he's in Congress. So some think that Maldonado could follow the same path, that he still could use the martyr of Democrats killed me in the legislature.
Yeah, potentially.
But Maldonado's running for the job, so
right.
So that has been resolved. He's not a caretaker lieutenant governor if
right.
he gets the job.
The major issue, another major issue about Maldonado's confirmation is it would set off a change of leadership in the Assembly, because the Republican who would run for Maldonado's Senate seat, if there is a vacancy, is Assembly Republican leader Sam Blakeslee. So that, you know, that's another consideration, I think, where some Senate Republicans may be less inclined to confirm Maldonado. Some Assembly Republicans may be more inclined because they want to run for Senate, or they want a new leader, or they want to take a run at being leader themselves.
So do you have any sense yet of whether because either house can vote to reject?
Correct.
Do you have any sense of whether the two houses, and let's say the two Democratic leaderships in each house, in the Assembly and the Senate, are going to work together to make this a one chamber or the other deal? Or is Maldonado really going to have to, and the governor's people, I should say, are they going to have to start trying to do a head count in each house? Do I have 21 in this one? Do I have 41 in this one to make my guy safe to get the job?
I don't know. And the politics are different in both the houses, because there is a working relationship between the current speaker and the Republican leader, Sam Blakeslee. And so my sense from talking to folks in both houses is that while the Assembly is committed to giving Maldonado a full hearing, that they are inclined to let this start in the Senate and let the Senate act first. That's just my gut instinct from talking to folks at this point. It's not going to be taken up until after the first of the year. And I think that, you know, one thing, too, is Democrats have relied on Maldonado for a budget vote the last couple of years.
And he actually is still a state senator.
He is. He has not resigned.
Yeah, I mean, that's a careful point to make here. He still has a seat in the Senate
right.
and a vote in the Senate if any budget issues come up before all of this happens.
But this is a guy who has been known to carry a grudge politically. And I think that if Maldonado
against Arnold Schwarzenegger, most famously.
Right. And if Maldonado is rejected by the Senate, my guess is you can kiss his budget vote goodbye.
Right.
And so I think that's part of the calculation here as Jerrell Steinberg tries to figure out if this is something that he has votes for, wants to do, thinks is a good idea. They've got to figure that out among themselves.
And so, what I find interesting, too, I would want to mention really quickly, is that let's look at the early positioning of the debate, of the argument, the early spin. Out of the governor, it comes down to short words. Moderate, bipartisan, Latino, soulmate, which the soulmate part.
That's
I think
new.
Soulmate we could debate about whether Arnold and Abel are actual soulmates.
Yes.
Global warming, not so much, yada, yada, yada. For Democrats, the early spin was costly special election to refill his seat when the state has no money.
Excuse me for laughing at that one.
You didn't buy that one.
No.
Anyway, but that was the early spin
right.
out of Democrats was, you know, we can't you can't appoint an elected, you know, a sitting legislator because it triggers all this extra money that we have to spend when the state doesn't have it. Now, granted, that may not have been as strong a spin as the governor's spin, but that's where we were at the very beginning of this discussion.
Right. Right. Yes.
And so
fair to
who
say.
Knows? But yeah, but I mean, I got to come back really quickly. This fact that Maldonado still sits in the Senate, that has not resigned his Senate seat,
mm-hmm.
I think is really important because we are facing a $21 billion problem. We're facing a $6.4 billion problem in the current budget year. We had a February budget vote in 2009.
What if he resigned? Wouldn't that just force everybody's hand?
Well, that would.
Don't you think that would be a stroke of Machiavellian genius?
That would be interesting.
Hint, hint.
That would be interesting.
And the budget vote is gone. There's an election anyway. And
But at the same time, him still having his seat gives him a lot of power, I think, about a budget vote. And if you need to have a budget vote before February 22nd, Abel's your man if you're a Democrat. If you're going to give him the job, Democrats, he ain't your man if you're going to reject him.
Wow, that's a game of chicken. I mean, yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's no horse trading though in the Capitol. John.
None.
No.
None. No. There's just gentlemen's agreements and gentle ladies.
I've got
agreements.
A Pinto parked out back.
A Pinto?
It's a horse. It's a kind of horse.
Oh, sorry. That was
Palomino. Weird. Would that have been better? Because it's not a car.
Okay, Palomino. I think we're going to wrap it up.
Geez.
That's it. That was corny. Okay, so more on this later. That was long enough for now, folks. That's this week's Capital Notes podcast. We'll see you next time.